I climbed the ledge and stuck my head into the cave, sniffed, checked things out. It looked pretty suspicious to me. I'm not the kind of dog who enjoys holes. Some do, I guess, but not me. I got locked in a big wooden tack box when I was a kid, and since then I've tried to avoid places that are dark and closed in. I started inside the cave, got a creepy feeling, and backed out. Figured I'd better study on it a little more before I did anything drastic. I mean, Junior had said something about snakes, and you know where I stand on the snake issue. How did I know that Madam Moonshine could cure eye crocerosis? In fact, how did I know that Madam Moonshine even existed? All I had to go on was the word of a couple of buzzards. And in the security business, we tend to give low priority to the testimony of buzzards. I just about talked myself out of going in there when I realized I had some company. I was peering inside the cave, see, and happened to glance to my left and saw a little owl. A burrowing owl, in fact, which I thought was an interesting coincidence. She was peering into the cave, too.
What's in there?
She had big yellow eyes, and I noticed she had a way of rolling her head around without moving her body. I don't know, ma'am. I've been told that someone called Madam Moonshine hangs out in here. I don't suppose you know anything about her, do you? They say she's a witch or something. The lady's head twisted around, and she stared at me with them big eyes.
You believe in witches?
Well, I don't know for sure. I never met one.
I don't believe in them, and I've met several. But I don't believe in dogs either, so there you are.
How come you don't believe in dogs? I mean, I'm a dog myself.
Well, that's only your opinion. Everyone has an opinion.
I couldn't help chuckling at that. Yeah, but I'm head of ranch security, see? Maybe you didn't realize that. You might say that I run this ranch, so my opinion carries a little weight.
Ah! You run this ranch?
Yes, ma'am, and have for several years. There's very little that goes on around here without my say-so.
I see. Do you make the sunrise?
Not exactly.
Do you tell the trees when to shed their leaves?
Well, no.
Did you teach the fish how to swim?
No, ma'am. She bent down and looked at the ground.
There's an ant. Would you mind telling him to go somewhere else?
I was feeling a little uncomfortable about this. I guess I could try. Ant, scram! Go on, get out of here! It didn't work. The lady gave me a puzzled look.
Now tell me again, what is it that you do?
I'm head of... Look, ants don't listen to anybody. They just ain't smart enough. Now get this. She spread out her wings and brought them together in front, so they pointed towards the ant, and she made a kind of whistling sound. The darn fool ant stopped in his tracks, turned around, and ran away. The lady looked at me and grinned and blinked her eyes.
I'm sorry, what were you saying?
Nothing. Then all at once it struck me. All the clues came together. I had figured it out. Wait a minute. I bet you're Madam Moonshine.
Oh, yes, I am. And you're Hank the Rabbit.
Huh? No, I'm Hank the Cowdog.
Of course. Yes, I see now. Won't you come in?
I squinted into that dark hole and gave it another sniffing. You got any snakes in there?
How many did you want?
I don't want any. I'm scared of them.
Oh, rubbish. Just tell them who you are. Come, follow me.
She hopped into the hole. I swallowed real hard and went in behind her. It was pretty narrow, and it got dark all of a sudden. I'd gone 5 or 6 feet when I started hearing a bunch of hissing and rattling and felt cold things crawling around. It was them dadgum snakes. I couldn't turn around, and I couldn't back out, so I crawled forward just as fast as I could. For a while, I could hear Madam Moonshine hopping up in front of me. But then all I could hear was hissing and rattling. Ma'am? No answer. I began to suspect that I'd made an error in judgment. I mean, eye crossorosis is pretty bad stuff, but it beats the heck out of dead dogorosis. The cave turned to the left, and up ahead I could see a big chamber with a shaft of sunlight coming down. I crawled toward it as fast as I could. I was out of breath when I got there, and when I looked around, there was no sign of Madam Moonshine. I sat down and waited. Heard a sound off to my left, turned, and saw a huge, enormous diamondback rattlesnake slipping towards me. He was flicking his tongue out, and he had a wicked look in his eyes. My first instinct was to build a new door in the roof, but then I remembered what Madam Moonshine had said. I held my ground and tried to get control of myself. "I'm Hank the Cow Dog, head of ranch security." He kept coming. "Maybe you didn't hear me. I said, I'm Hank the Cow Dog, head of ranch security." That was supposed to do the trick, but it didn't. The snake built a coil at my feet and started buzzing. I thought I was finished, fellers. But just then, Madam Moonshine's head popped out of a hole in the cave wall.
"Back again? Oh, you've met Timothy, and my goodness, I think he's going to bite you. Didn't you tell him who you are? Timothy, shame on you. Go away. Shoot. This is the head of ranch security."
The snake slipped away into the gloom. She came out of the hole in the wall and hopped over to the place where the sunlight hit the floor.
Little witchy owl, now I'm here and then I'm not. I'm in command of sleight of hand. With me you never know what you got. Well, I can be bright as the sunshine, or I can be dark as the night. I'll never tell when I'm casting a spell, and if I say I will, I might or might not. I am sublime, my name is Madam Moonshine, and riddles are my poison darts. I'm in control of my little hole, which is greater than the sum of its parts. Well, I can be silver or golden, just like the stars of the moon. Or I can scream and interrupt your dream, like a hurricane, tornado, typhoon, disaster. Wicked little witchy owl, now I'm here and then I'm not. I'm in command of sleight of hand. With me you never know what you got. I'm very, very seldom just what you thought. I'm just as likely to ignore you as not.
Tell me what you're doing here.
I told her the whole story, about how my eyes had crossed and how Rufus had whooped up on me and how Pete had suckered me out into the wilderness, the buzzards, everything. While I told the story, she picked up a lizard bone in her claws and chewed on it, and every now and then she would give her head a nod. "You think you can help me, madam?" She pitched the bone aside and wiped her mouth on her wing.
"Maybe and maybe not. We'll have to test you. How many fingers am I holding up?"
I squinted at her.
Three? No, I'm holding up no fingers. Owls have no fingers. Can you read the letters on this chart?
I squinted again. Ma'am, I can't even see the darn chart.
Good, excellent. There isn't one. Now, can you tell me the color of this tree?
You can fool Hank the cow dog once in a row, or maybe twice in a row, but not three times. There's no tree, ma'am.
There certainly is a tree. This is the bottom part, called a root. It's brown. Yes, you have a problem, but I just happen to have a cure.
You do?
I certainly do. Come over here, lie down, and hold still.
I did as she said. She closed her eyes and took the end of my nose in her claws. I watched her very carefully and memorized every step. And what you're about to hear is the secret combination that'll cure eye-crossorosis. Here's what she said, word for word.
Left, two.
She twisted my nose twice to the left.
Right, three.
She twisted it to the right three times.
Left, one, and push.
I don't expect anyone to believe this, but it's the by George truth. When she pushed my nose, my tail shot up, my mouth fell open, and my eyes came uncrossed. I told you you wouldn't believe it. I could see again. Everything was clear. Madam Moonshine stepped back and smiled.
Oh, it worked. How nice. But to be sure, let's test it. How many legs do I have?
Two.
Excellent. How many wings?
Two.
Very good. Now, just one last question. How do you expect to get out of here?
Huh? Well, I sort of thought you might lead me out and keep the snakes down, is sort of what I thought. She shook her head.
Oh, dear, you missed that one.
I glanced around and saw Big Timothy coiled in the middle of my escape route. Well, what's the correct answer? She clapped her wings together.
The correct answer is that you'll stay and we'll play riddles for days and days and weeks and years and ever until you solve one. And then I shall have to let you go.
Now hold on, I got a job.
Rubbish.
I've got responsibilities.
Rubbish.
I need to get back.
Rubbish.
And I'm gonna leave one way or the...
Timothy!
Big Tim started buzzing. On second thought, let's play riddles.
Oh, good! Here's one. If wishes were horses, beggars would be what?
Cowboys?
No.
Saddles?
No.
I really do need to get back, Madam Moonshine. She laid down and propped her head up on her wing.
But you can't, Hank. I'm a witch and I can't stand for things to be simple. There must be a non-reason for everything. I can't just let you leave without a non-reason. No, you'll have to answer a riddle before I can let you go.
I studied Big Tim again. He flicked out his tongue. Okay, let's hit the riddles.
Here's a good one. How much wood could a woodpecker chuck if a pecker was a checkerboard square?
I asked her to repeat it.
How much wood could a woodpecker chuck if a pecker was a checkerboard square?
How much wood could a checkerboard peck if... Can you give me a hint?
Just one hint. The answer's not what you think it is.
That's a big help. Well, give me a minute. I'll have to do some figuring. I had to use some algebra on this one. I mean, when you go to multiplying woodpeckers times peckerwoods and adding in all the chucks and chips and checkerboards, you got to have some pretty stout mathematics. Plain old numbers won't work. I figured and I figured. I wrote all my formulas in the dust, scratched out one or two and added a number here and there and a formula here and there and finally came up with the answer. Madam Moonshine was wearing a peculiar smile. Okay, here we are. The answer I get is 5.03. The bottom fell out of her smile.
I don't believe it.
She sat up and stared at me.
No one has ever solved that riddle before. How did you do it?
Well, ma'am, all I can say is that they didn't make me head of ranch security for nothing. I have certain talents, I guess.
That is a monstrous understatement. You could very well be a genius.
You're not the first one that said that, ma'am.
I can imagine not.
She closed her eyes and clasped her wings together.
Oh, dear, I shall have to let you go. Timothy, open.
The snake crawled over into a corner. Madam Moonshine sighed and led the way. On the way out, I could hear them snakes crawling around, and I was mighty glad Madam was leading the way. When we reached the opening, I stepped outside. I looked around, and I could see again. Well, Madam, I want to thank you for everything. You've done this ranch a tremendous favor, and we'll never forget it. Bye now. I trotted down the hill.
Oh, Hank!
I stopped and turned back to her.
Do you believe in witches now?
Yes, ma'am, I reckon I do. And do you believe in dogs now? She thought about that for a second.
No.
And with that, she was gone. Instead of going back to the ranch, I headed down the creek. I had a little errand to take care of on the next ranch. It was 3 miles to the ranch where Plato and Beulah and Rufus stayed. I kept to the creek for a mile or so, then got on the county road when the creek made its big horseshoe bend to the north. Boy, I felt good. The air was sweet with wildflowers and the sunshine warmed my back. My eyes worked, my aches and pains had gone away, and I could feel the muscles inside my skin straining to get out and do handsprings. I made a mental note to myself. Next time you get to feeling poorly, go see Madam Moonshine because she can cure more ills than black draught. I knew about black draught since Loper had once used it on me to cure a case of worms. Don't try it unless everything else has failed and it's come down to a choice between black draught and certain death. It was late afternoon when I reached the outbuildings of the ranch, and by that time I'd worked out a strategy. Instead of busting in and having a showdown right away, I would lurk around and check things out. Also give my highly conditioned body a chance to recharge. I didn't want to underestimate the magnitude of the task before me. Taking on Rufus would be a handful, even on a good day. I went creeping through some tall grass on the west edge of the place. I could see Billy down at the corrals, working with a young horse. Didn't see any signs of Beulah or Rufus. I spotted a pile of old cedar posts and headed for it. I would set up a scout position there and just, you know, let the pot bubble for a while. I reached the post pile and was peering around a corner when I heard a noise. Sounded like... It was kind of hard to describe, but it sounded a whole lot like teeth chattering. And it was coming from inside the post pile. I cocked my head and listened. Who's in there? Nobody! Ha, you expect me to believe that? You ain't dealing with just any old slouch. You'd best come out before I get riled. Who are you? My name's Irrelevant. The order is for you to come out before I have to make kindling out of this post pile. Okay, I'm coming. Don't bite, for Pete's sake. My skin tears very easily. Out came a spotted bird dog with rings around his eyes that made it appear that he was wearing glasses. He was trembling all over. You guessed it. Plato, my old rival in the Love of Beulah department. We'd met once or twice before, but we weren't what you'd call bosom friends.
Hank? Oh, thank heaven it's you.
It may be a little too soon to thank heaven, Plato. He slapped his paw against his cheek.
Oh, Lord! At first I thought you were that Doberman. This has been an incredible experience. Would you believe 5 days in the post pile? I mean, actually in fear of my life? I'm telling you, man, it's been...
Where's Rufus? Plato's eyes widen.
I don't know where Rufus is, and that's okay. I've got nothing at all against the dog. I'm perfectly willing to relate to him.
Why do you ask? I'm looking for him.
Good Lord, why?
Grudge.
Grudge? Okay.
He started back and towards the post pile.
Well, my position is very simple, Hank.
Your position better stay out of the post pile.
Sure, okay, but what I'm saying is that I don't really approve of grudges. The idea, I mean.
This ain't an idea.
Okay.
I peered around the edge of the post pile and studied the lay of the land. Then I caught sight of the enemy. He was down in the backyard, chewing on a big steak bone. Beulah sat a few feet away, watching him tear at the bone. Come here, Plato. Take a look. He crept over and peeked around the corner.
Good Lord! Just look at him!
Here's the way I figure it. You'll go down first and get his attention.
What?
And I'll move out and keep undercover. While he's busy with you, I'll attack and hit him on the blind side.
Wait a minute, Hank!
I hate to take a cheap shot, but I got a feeling we're going to need the element of surprise.
Hey, listen, Hank. I think we've got a basic misunderstanding here. What I have in mind is more of an advisory role. You see the distinction? I mean, I think my talents... Listen, man, that dog is terrible. Do you have any idea what he can do with those teeth?
Got a real good idea, Plato. That's why I need a decoy.
Decoy, is it? You mean a sitting duck. No way am I going down there.
I turned on my slow rumble of a growl. Plato swallowed and blinked his eyes.
You're giving me no choice, is that it?
Yep.
Suicide, that's what you're asking? Oh, what madness!
He began marching up and down in front of me.
You've spent years cultivating your mind, Plato, training yourself to hunt birds. Now all we ask is that you offer yourself to the dragon to be torn to ribbons of quivering, bleeding flesh.
You finished?
Yes, I'm finished, in every sense of the word. However, if I might offer one small suggestion, suppose we held me in reserve.
Get going.
Very well. All right, fine. But I must warn you, if I am maimed or disfigured, I shall hold you personally responsible.
Hit the road.
History will be your judge, Hank. Unborn generations of bird dogs will...
I gave him a shove and got him out of the way. I mean, he could have gone on yapping for the rest of the afternoon. I still had some work to do. Rufus heard the commotion and looked up from his bone. He watched Plato walk down the hill, and a grin spread across his face. Beulah saw him too, and her mouth dropped open. Rufus pushed himself up.
Ah, fresh meat!
Listen, Rufus, I can explain everything. Try to control yourself just for a minute and hear me out. We've had a little misunderstanding here, but I'm convinced that we can talk it over.
Watch my bone, honey.
Rufus started dragging his paws across the ground.
Leave him alone, Rufus. He hasn't done anything.
He's alive, and I take that as a personal insult.
He rolled his muscular shoulders and stepped out towards Plato. The trap was set. I slipped away from the post pile and started creeping down the hill, taking cover behind shrubs and trash cans. Plato started edging back towards the post pile.
We're in basic agreement on most issues, Rufus, except that...
I can't stand your face!
Rufus was stalking him now, coming closer to the spot where I was waiting.
Right, exactly, which is basically a superficial...
All at once, Rufus sprang into a lope. The muscles in his shoulders and thighs rippled. His teeth were bared and his little eyes glistened. All the world had narrowed down to Plato, and that's all he could see. I shot one last glance down at Beulah, coiled my legs under me, and exploded out of the shrubs. Plato stood on rubber legs and started babbling.
Can talk this thing out, Rufus! Don't look at me that way! I can explain! For God's sake, don't tear my skin!
There's kind of a evil beauty about a Doberman pincher who's moving in for the kill. A kind of gracefulness that sparkles when he's got murder on his mind. caught a little glimpse of that, and then I hit him. Was never saw him coming. Never had the slightest notion that he'd wander down in a trap. I hit him with a full head of steam, which was important because I knew I'd have to stun him with a good lick or he'd come back, and we don't need to go into that. I put a real stunner on him, got a clamp on his neck, and rode him to the ground. We rolled and kicked and snarled and ripped, sent up a big cloud of dust, tore up grass and weeds, and if I'm not mistaken, I think we even broke off a huge tree. That gives you some idea of just how terrible a battle it was. I mean, things were flying through the air, the dust got so thick I could hardly breathe, tree limbs were falling to the ground. Well, I gnawed on one of Rufus's ears and had things pretty much under control when, dang the luck, he put that same judo move on me. I should have been watching for it, got too preoccupied with the ear, and all at once he had me flat on the ground. Then he hit right in the middle of me, kind of knocked the breath out of me. I could hear Plato.
Sock him, Hank! Knock his eye out! Give him one for me! Watch out! No, 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 for Pete's sake, don't let him throw you! Bad move, Hank. Real poor move. You got to keep the upper hand. Use your teeth, man.
Get in here, you idiot, before he kills us all.
Just then, Beulah got there. Never thought I'd need the help of a damsel in distress. Did, though. She jumped and straddled his back, and although she wasn't real big, she started reading him the riot act. And then, to the surprise of heaven and earth and all God's wonderful creation, Plato hopped in. On a good day, he might have been mean enough to chew up a wet Kleenex. Maybe. But at least he was there and adding a little weight to the pile. I was able to get one paw free and delivered a good stroke to Rufus's nose. We got him on the ground and then playtime started. I was in the process of whooping the ever-living tar out of Roof when Billy came running down from the corral, yelling and waving his arms. His face was a deep red.
Yeah, get out of here! Hank, you sorry devil, go home!
The rocks started flying. Plato and Beulah scattered for the post pile. I figured I'd hang around for one more lick when I caught a stone in the upper back, hurt like the very dickens, and I decided to evacuate. I stepped off. See you around, Rufy. Billy chunked another rock that zinged past my ear, so I loped up to the post pile.
Don't you ever come back here! Just let me get my gun!
I ducked behind the posts. Beulah and Plato were there. She came up to me and nuzzled my chin.
You were just great, Hank.
Incredible, Hank. Terrific job.
They were right, of course, but you can't come right out and say that.
Y'all didn't do so bad yourselves.
Beulah peeked around the corner and motioned for us to take a look. Billy was standing over his famous fighting dog and preaching him some hot gospel.
$200 and then you get yourself whipped by a 1095 flea-bitten, sewer-dipping cow dog.
He was referring to me, by the way.
I ought to just take you to town and find some other sucker.
Never saw old Roof look so humble. Even them high-toned ears seemed a trifle wilted. We held a little celebration there behind the post pile. Then Beulah said,
You better go, Hank. Billy's mad enough to shoot you.
When you're made of steel, you don't worry about lead. Plato nodded.
Well put, Hank. Very well put.
Beulah only smiled. That wonderful smile of hers that said, You're probably one of the greatest dogs in the world, and I'm about to fall helplessly in love with you, but you'd better go, or something to that effect. Anyway, she leaned up and kissed me on the cheek, which sent ripples of joy clean out to the end of my tail.
Goodbye, Hank.
So I loped off towards the creek and into the sunset. Just before I disappeared from sight, I stopped and gave them one last wave. They waved back, which was fine and dandy, but when Plato lowered his paw, it came to rest on Beulah's shoulder. And instead of slugging him in the teeth, as she should have done, she let it stay there. Moral number one. Time heals some wounds, but makes others worse. Moral number two, women are hard to figure out. Moral number three, women are impossible to figure out. Moral number four, might as well give up trying. It was dark by the time I got into familiar country again. Off to the north, I could see the caprock brooding in the moonlight. And off to the south, I could hear the bullfrogs croaking along the creek. Up ahead, I could see the dark outline of the machine shed. I'd been gone for days, and I had notched up some pretty exciting adventures, but it would be good to be back home again. I wondered how tight the security had been in my absence. I had a pretty good idea, but I decided to give it a little test. Instead of coming into headquarters the back way, I marched right past the house and the machine shed, the vital center of the ranch operation. No challenge, no warning, no order to halt, no barking, no nothing. I mean, the whole place was exposed like an open wound. Any scoundrel could have walked in there and had himself a picnic. I went down to the gas tanks to see if Drover, my assistant head of non-security, was pushing up Z's on his gunny sack. He wasn't there, so I moved on down to the corral. As I approached the saddle shed, I heard voices and slowed down to a stealthy walk. I kept close to the fence and crept up to where I could see and hear.
"I'm tired of playing tag," said Pete.
"And I'm tired of chasing crickets. I kind of miss old Hank, don't you?"
Pete's head shot up.
Hank, now there's an idea.
Drover looked around.
"Where?"
"Why don't we put on a play?"
"A play? What do you mean?"
"I'll be Hank and you can be Rufus. We'll make it a comedy on Hanky."
"A comedy? You mean we'll make fun of him?"
Something like that."
Pete flicked the end of his tail back and forth and rubbed up against the post.
"Now, wouldn't that be fun?"
"Well, it might be, but I bet Hank wouldn't appreciate it."
"Oh, of course he would. You know what a wonderful sense of humor he has."
"I do?"
"Certainly. If he has a single fault, it's that he's always making jokes at his own expense."
"Hank does that?"
Pete went over and started waving his tail in front of Drover's eyes. The little mutt's head went back and forth in time with it.
"And besides, Hanky's not around, remember? We can do anything we want, and what he doesn't know won't hurt him."
Drover glanced over his shoulder.
"I don't know about that."
"Just watch the tail, Drover. Keep your eyes on the tip. Yeah, that's better. Think of how much fun it would be."
Pete was purring now. He brought the tip of his tail under Drover's chin and wound it around his nose.
"Maybe so. You don't think it'd be disrespectful, do you?"
"My heavens, no. All you have to do is play Rufus. I'll do Hanky's lines. Just try to imagine that you're a Doberman pincher."
"Well, all right. If you're sure, I just hope Hank doesn't catch us."
Pete rubbed on Drover's leg.
"No one'll be any the wiser. Now, make up your lines in verse and get into character. Here, watch me. I'll do the Hank walk."
He puffed himself up and started swaggering around. Struck me as a real poor acting job. I mean, it was perfectly obvious that he wasn't imitating me. What we had there was a classic example of how a dumb cat can play a dumb part and still come out looking dumb.
"And you see, I've got my eyes crossed and I'll start running into things."
Drover tried not to laugh.
"Well, that's not very nice, but it is kind of funny."
Pete ran into a post, grabbed his nose and yowled and rolled over on his back.
You're on, Rufus. Say your lines.
Grover walked over to him, kind of stiff-legged, and here are the immortal words that came out of his mouth.
My name is Roof, and I've come with proof that cow dogs are a silly invention. Now get off the ground, let's go round and round, and chew on my bone of contention.
Pete grinned and nodded.
Very good, very good. You're a bloomin' poet, Drover. Do some more, only this time make it a little...
He studied his claws.
Nastier.
Well, I don't know. I guess I could try. Let's see here. I'm a Doberman pincher, and I don't wear dentures. I'm big, and I'm mean, and I'm rude. You think you're hot stuff, so get off your duff. Hot stuff is my favorite food.
Excellent, excellent.
Pete tapped his paws together.
You're getting the hang of it now.
Grover gave a silly grin and wagged his stub tail.
You don't think it was too nasty, do you, Pete?
It's only a play. It's not real.
I guess you're right, but...
Now it's time for my part. Enter Hanky.
Pete did his blind stagger routine again, puffed himself up, and bounced off a couple of fence posts.
Sir Hanky's my name, and protection's my game. I usually stay angry and wroth. I bet halitosis would beat crocerosis, but dang it, I think I've got both.
Grover covered his mouth with a paw, but couldn't keep from laughing.
Oh, that's terrible. That's just... Can you do some more?
You like that, hmm? Give me a minute to think.
While he was thinking, I figured it might be a good time for me to say my part. I had an idea it'd bring down the house. My name is Drover. Your little play's over. Beware, all you cats and dumb mutts. You've had your good fun, and now you'd best run, 'cause I'm fixin' to start kicking butts. I stood up. All eyes were on me. Pete quit flicking his tail.
The cops are here.
Drover gasped and squeaked.
Oh, my gosh! I knew we shouldn't. Hi, Hank. Pete made me. I told him.
Pete started edging down the fence towards the feed barn.
Well, I think I'll do a little mouse patrol.
I turned on my incredible speed, and in three jumps, I had him rolled up into a hissing, spitting ball of fur. Grover started jumping up and down.
Get him, Hanky! Get him! Get him!
I gave the cat a pretty sound thrashing before he slipped out of my grip and made a dash for the feed barn. There's a hole at the bottom of the door, just big enough for a cat to slither through, and not quite big enough for a dog. Pete made a run for it, one step ahead of my jaws. He made it through the hole, and I figured, what the heck, I might as well tear the door down. So I lowered my head and rammed it into the hole. Turned out, the door was a little stouter than I'd thought. Cricked up my neck pretty severely, and boy, was I surprised when I couldn't get my head out of the hole. Had to throw everything into reverse and plow with all four paws before she popped free. Grover was still hopping up and down.
Attaway, Hanky! Nice work, boy! We taught that cat!
I straightened my neck up and marched over to him. He quit hopping up and down and studied me.
Hank!
I kept marching, didn't say a word. And in a flash, little Grover was highballing it up the hill to the machine shed. I took out after him, figured I'd catch him about halfway up the hill. Only little Grover is faster than you might suppose when he knows his life's in danger. Never did catch the runt. He disappeared inside the machine shed. You might as well come out, Grover. I peered into the darkness and tried to decide which stack of junk he was hiding behind. The paint cans, the windmill parts, the old tires, the electric fence batteries, the spare parts for the stock trailer, Highloper's canoe, or Sally Mae's wedding presents. You could have lost three elephants in that place. Come on, Grover. You better face the music. I see you.
We was only funnin', Hank. It wasn't real. Pete said so.
You coming out, or do I have to tear this place apart?
I'm scared, Hank.
Okay, you asked for it. I waded in. When something got in my way, I just, by George, leveled it. Knocked it aside, left it in rubble. You should have heard them paint cans clatter. I mean, when Hank the Cowdog gets on a case, nothing's safe, especially a villain. It's only a matter of time till I track him down, and then you can imagine the terrible scene. Grover was in real peril. I tore the place apart, turned it upside down, just about wore me out. Grover, tell you what I'm gonna do. If you'll turn yourself in, we'll forget the death penalty. I'll let you off with a good thrashing.
I'm still scared, Hank. I'm too scared to walk.
All right, a minor thrashing.
I'm just petrified, Hank. I can't move.
I thought for a long time. Justice has to be flexible. Okay, here's my last offer. If you'll stand with your nose in the corner for 15 minutes, we'll let it slide this time. He came out. He'd been under the dang canoe. Sure thought he was behind the paint cans. Now you march down to the gas tanks and put your nose in the corner.
Okay, Hank, but that's a terrible punishment.
You bet it is, and let that be a lesson to you. We picked our way through the junk, across the cement floor to the door. When we got into the moonlight, Grover stopped.
Good Lord, Hank, look at your feet. You're bleeding.
I glanced down. Sure enough, my feet were covered with blood. Must have cut them on something sharp and terrible. I started getting faint from loss of blood. My legs got wobbly. Rush me to the sewer, Grover. This could be serious. Grover sniffed the air.
Wait a minute! What's that I smell?
Just before I lost consciousness, I sniffed the air. Wait a minute! What's that I smell? It's paint, Grover. Red paint. You saw something red and wet and jumped to conclusions. A lot of times you can study the clues, son, and figure these things out. Now march. I marched him down to the gas tanks and stuck his nose in the corner. It was a terrible punishment, all right, but he had it coming. Well, it was great to be home again. I mean, in just a few days' time, I'd managed to get all the loose ends tied together. I had my ranch back in order, and things were running smoothly again. Just to give you an idea of how well things worked out, around 7 o'clock in the morning, I looked up in the sky and saw the silver monster bird again. But he wasn't flying low this time, no siree. He was way the heck up there. I mean, you scare them birds bad enough and they'll stay off your ranch. They know the meaning of danger. I was watching the monster bird pass over when I heard High Loper come down the hill. I looked around and was shocked to see a smile on his face. And unless I was badly mistaken, he was even laughing to himself. Hank, by golly, I just heard the good news. Billy called, and boy, was he steamed up. Said you gave his Doberman a licking. Heck of a deal, heck of a deal. He whopped me on the side a couple of times. Made me cough, in fact. But that was okay. This calls for a celebration. Double dog food, Hanky. Come on, boy, let's go up to the machine shed. Off we went. A loyal, courageous dog and his master. It was just, by George, a pretty touching moment in ranch history. But as you might expect, Grover tried to butt in. You know, as if he had done something to deserve special commendation, when in fact he was still on probation. You stay here, son, and think about doing right for a change. Loper chuckled all the way up the hill. Just went over there and whipped that old Doberman on his own ranch. I like that, Hank. Shows spunk and spirit and vinegar and... We had walked into the machine shed. Loper stopped. His smile began to droop, and then it fell flat. The place was, well, a little messy, shall we say. His eyes went to the paint cans and the big puddle of red on the floor. He looked at the red tracks on the cement. He looked at my red paws. I glanced around to cast an accusing eye at Grover, but naturally the little dunce wasn't there. I began to wag my tail. I can't see that it would serve any purpose to go into details here. It should be clear by now that the machine shed was damaged in the line of duty. It should also be clear that misunderstanding is just one of the prices of greatness. Those of us who live on the heights must live with the judgments of small minds. We can only hope that in the next life, justice will reign. It rains here, but it also hails.